Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, November 5. The author of Red State, Blue State, Rich State, Poor State, Why Americans Vote the Way They Do, and Why We Voted the Way We Did Yesterday is what we talk about the next hour of the program. Andrew Gelman is our guest, professor of statistics and political science at Columbia University, author of the aforementioned book. He is also author of Teaching Statistics, A Bag of Tricks. He received the President's Award in 2003, which is awarded each year to the best statistician under the age of 40. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Andrew. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Professor Andrew Gelman, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, very nice to have you here. So as you were watching everything, I wonder how a statistician watches the election returns. Do you watch it differently than we do?
Well, yeah. Yeah, the first thing is I just get really frustrated and start screaming at the TV.
Oh, no, why?
Well, they don't give enough information.
Oh. So
there's two pieces of information they have on election night that they're not telling us. The first is exit polls. Now, I can respect that they're not telling us the exit polls because they don't want to mislead us.
Right.
Also, I can respect that they wait until the polls close in any state before telling us a word, and that's, you know, that's only fair too, to give everybody a chance to vote without preconception. But there's one piece of information they have they're not telling us, and that they could, and that's when the states start to report. You hear that 8% of the precincts are in, or 12% of the precincts are in, and here are the votes so far. They tell you the gap between, in this case, Obama and McCain. I would like to see the difference between, I would like to see how Kerry and Bush did 4 years ago in those exact same precincts.
Mm-hmm.
They could show it graphically or even with numbers, and then we could all play at home and say, look, you know, here's Obama doing, in a given state, doing 7% better at just about everywhere. So even with only 14% of the precincts in, I have a suspicion that he's going to win or outperform.
Mm-hmm.
They could tell us that without calling states early. They could just give us the information that they already have. It's not an exit poll. It's exact votes. So I maybe next time they'll do that.
Yeah, I think they did a little bit. I was at so many channels last night, I can't remember which one. But I know somebody, it may have been John King, who was looking a little bit at that, and Chuck Todd a little bit as well, but not a whole lot.
They did it a little bit. It was episodic. So
right.
Excuse me, my kids are sick, so
oh, so you are
them.
Too. Aww.
So, yeah, they would focus on just the numbers and the counts, and every once in a while they go into the state with a touch screen and talk about that. And from hearing them talk, I could fill in the blanks. And shortly after 6 p.m., I could tell that Obama was going to win because they were saying things like, in the places where Obama was, you know, that Obama was outperforming Kerry in these places. But they didn't really make it easy to hear that. They weren't presenting the numbers as they just easily could have. It would have just been one more column in the results for each state.
Right. Well, what about those exit polls? Weren't those pretty widely discredited after 2004?
They weren't that far off. It was just that 2004 was a very close election.
Mm.
The trouble is that a lot of the biases that you're going to have in any poll, they might transfer from state to state. They're not necessarily going to cancel out. If one guy's doing better in the exit polls than the other, and it causes a 2-point shift in, or even a 1-point shift in an election like 2004, that could make the difference. It wouldn't have mattered here. But, you know, I respect them for not throwing exit poll results at us. I can see that there's a worry that people would overreact.
Right. But you knew at 6 o'clock last night. That's interesting.
Well, just, I mean, well, I didn't know, right? But
right,
what I mean
right.
is when I heard the CNN guy saying something about one of the states, because all Obama had to do was do as well as predicted in the polls. And he did. And as they were saying things in one of the states about how he was outperforming Kerry, I could tell that, A, I could tell that that was good news for the Democrats, but B, I had a feeling that the anchors wouldn't have said that unless they had more information that they weren't telling us.
Interesting. So did anything go beyond red state, blue state, rich state, poor state last night? Were you challenged? Were the ideas in your book challenged at all, or were they confirmed?
Oh, the ideas in my book were challenged. I think the biggest thing that happened isn't really discussed in my book at all, but there was an increase in voter turnout. I haven't seen the full numbers, but you you have, I mean, there were talk about huge increases in voter turnout, but we hear that every election. And then after the election, some people are saying, well, it wasn't such a big turnout.
Right.
It was just, you know, like, sure, you know, what happened to all those people who were so enthusiastic about Obama and McCain? But the turnout went up as a percentage of voters. And I remember when, you know, when I was, you know, before 1992, every year turnout went down, like from 1960 onward. Every year they would, after 1960, they'd say how turnout's lower than last year. It's considered an inevitable decline. When I, a few years ago, I had the privilege of hearing a lecture by Mervyn Field, who founded the California Poll, which is really the, you know, first big professionally done state poll. And he talked about how in the 1950s, people, pollsters talked about non-voters. Who are these non-voters? Are they alienated? You know, people talked in the 1950s, right? Like all that. How come they don't fit in like everyone's supposed to? But then in the 90s, Field was saying, now everybody says, who are these voters? Who are these people? Why do they vote? What makes them tick? You know, what's going on that makes them do this weird thing? But now we're so used to the idea that, I mean, turnout could go up. And I think that's amazing. It's not like 1992. 1992 had Ross Perot. It's not a surprise that turnout goes up when you have a third candidate on offer, because it's well known that people prefer to vote for somebody than against somebody. But here we have just two candidates. I mean, you know, there were minor parties, but essentially two candidates running, turnout going up, and I think that's huge, really, from the perspective of how things stood even 10 years ago or 20 years ago.
Interesting. And what about this early voting? Do you think this is a good thing for the country? Did it? It's amazing how people had to wait in these extraordinarily long lines to do a lot of early voting in the country. Do we need to move to that kind of pattern and open up more polling places all over the country to expand that voter base even more?
Personally, I don't like waiting online, and so I'm supportive. There's some evidence. Some political scientists have studied what happens as voter turnout increases, as more people vote. Clearly, you're getting people who are less interested in voting, who are, you know, otherwise less likely to make whatever small sacrifice there is to vote. And when you pull in the non-voters, I do think it's ultimately good for politics to have more people involved, and ultimately can change the issues that people consider important. I mean, they're a lower income, less, a more alienated group, also a less ideological group than non-voters.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's a good thing, yeah.
Were you surprised at all? And tell me how the Obama campaign was able to switch states like Florida, Ohio, Virginia. Was that an important part of their strategy? And is that a meaningful vote, more meaningful than we might analyze?
I'll say two things. First, Obama's most brilliant campaign strategy, which he executed perfectly, was being a Democrat in a year when the president was a Republican and the economy was tanking.
Right.
And he did that perfectly in the sense that, you know, he did focus voters on that. But I think anyone was going to win in that way. Now, after that, there was about a 4.5% swing. He got about 4.5% better in the country as a whole compared to John Kerry, 4.5 percentage points. In Wisconsin, he got about 7 percentage points better.
Hmm.
And in fact, Obama outperformed in the upper Midwest and the mountain states. It's really not, considering Wisconsin, Indiana are neighbors of Illinois, it's not so surprising. He didn't actually do that much better in Illinois, interestingly enough. But one reason why maybe is in 2004, he was actually running for the Senate in Illinois, so that maybe helped carry a little bit. So my first statement is it's mostly a national swing. There are some states like Louisiana where actually Obama did worse than Kerry. Of course, we know Louisiana has changed a bit since Katrina. There are some states like New Hampshire and Hawaii, for that matter, where he did much. I mean, yeah, Vermont and Hawaii, where he did much better than Kerry. But overall, it was a national swing, and I think that the campaign certainly focused on particular states. At the same time, McCain's campaign focused on defending those same states, and so I think what you're really seeing is a rising tide lifting all boats.
Hmm. And it is, this is something we've talked about so much. His organization was so strong. He spent so much money. He had so many people volunteering down to the neighborhood. The Democrats really knew what they were doing. And usually the Republicans seem to be doing a much better job than of that part of the game, don't you think?
I think that, yeah, I think it's also true that if people think you're going to win, then you're going to get more support, both in terms of endorsement and in terms of money. But sure, in 2000, Bush beat Gore, and he outspent Gore by about $60 million. Now, in 2008, Obama had a resounding victory over McCain and outspent McCain by a couple hundred million dollars. And spending that money is going to make you look better. I think that's a lot of it right there. when you do have more resources and when things look better, you're going to look smarter. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying the Obama campaign wasn't smart. I'm just saying it's a lot easier. You know, it's a lot easier to pedal your bike downhill than uphill.
Right. Let's go to an email, Mark from Madison. The networks were throwing out statistics hard and heavy last night, but one struck me. The Republican base who turned out for voting in Ohio was down significantly last night when every other group was up. Do you think there's a segment of Republicans who just gave up? They couldn't vote for McCain because of Bush, and they couldn't bring themselves to vote for Obama.
Probably there were such people. And I haven't looked at the data from Ohio. Overall, I doubt that sort of thing is explaining a lot. I think that the strong supporters, the base of both parties, tends to turn out even in favor of a moderate candidate from that party.
Let's go to a few phone calls. Brendan from Minneapolis is first. Hi, Brendan.
Good morning.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me on. I'm actually on my way back to Minneapolis. I drove down with my sister to participate at Grant Park last night with my two older sisters there.
Oh.
And it was great for me to be a part of it because I had voted for George Bush. I'm the younger brother, and I thought that being a Republican was the cool thing to do because that's what you need to do to make money. And I've been so happy and pleased with Barack Obama. And the way that he campaigned. However, I am concerned that he's not responsible, I don't believe, for bridging the gap of the race problem that we have in America. And the one thing that I have a question about is there's been so much talk about No Child Left Behind. So many of my friends graduated from college and had gone to good colleges and finished with an enormous amount of debt. And we talk about, you know, No Child Left Behind. What are we going to do for students who go to college, get bombarded with credit cards, get student loans, buy plasma TVs, get fancy cars, have a car payment, all these things, and the banks are preying on us. So what can we do, or what is Barack's plan going to be so that we can move forward? Because it is going to be a lot of work, but I think the thing that he has showed is that if you believe in something and you put it into action, that you can achieve it. And that's what I'm so proud about. So thank you, and I look forward to hearing
okay.
what you guys have to say about it.
Thanks, Brendan. Thanks for the call.
I think the Democrats have a tough economy. Even after getting out of Iraq and saving all that money there, it's still going to be hard to find the money to pay for all the budget items people want to pay for. On the other hand, economists have said that with interest rates close to zero, the government can afford to borrow. So I think ultimately a lot depends on the political will. How it turns out in terms of how the voters view Obama 4 years from now, I mean, it's the day after the election, so you know, the gun has sounded for the 2012 campaign, so why don't I talk about that? That in the short term, a lot of it is about expectations. Right now, people aren't expecting to be able to buy the plasma TVs that they were expecting to buy before. These changes in expectations that came before Obama was elected, so that might be in his favor. In 2012, a lot is going to depend on how things go compared to 2011. So remember Ronald Reagan. He came into office. Well, you don't remember Ronald Reagan because you're the youngest in your family, but I do. Ronald Reagan came into office with a very bad economy. And then the economy got worse during his first 2 years. There was the worst recession since the 30s, then the economy bounced back, and by the time he ran for re-election, there was an economic expansion. Now, I imagine that Obama's economic advisors are trying to see if they can duplicate some aspects of that.
Let's pause for just a moment and return. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Andrew Gelman is our guest. His latest book is Red State, Blue State, Rich State, Poor State, Why Americans Vote the Way They Do. He's a professor of statistics and political science at Columbia University. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to your phone calls now and to Claire from Germantown. Hi, Claire.
Hi, thanks for taking me on.
Sure.
I'm a Jewish Christian, and I have to put a plug in for Sarah. She's wonderful, and she'd make a wonderful president. And if you go to the library and get the magazine National Review and look on page 44, there you will find the truth. Thank you.
All right. She was a drag on the Republican ticket, wasn't she, do you think,
well,
Andrew?
Well, I think, I don't know about that.
You don't think so?
I don't know about that, which is literally what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to know. It's as we say in statistics, a sample of size one. I'll say this, that when Sarah Palin was picked and there was a 5 or 10% swing towards John McCain, especially among social conservatives, some people said McCain had done a brilliant stroke, and a lot of people said this had helped him. What I was saying at the time was that those social conservatives probably would have gone for McCain anyway, no matter who he had picked. I think that picking Palin affected the timing more than anything else. And so, yeah, McCain got a bounce, then people moved back the other way. It's possible. I mean, according to the polls, it probably hurt him a little bit, but I think we're talking about at most 1 percentage point. There's really very little evidence that the VP choice matters much. Now, just in response to the caller's comment, let me just say that it's Palin will have to, if she chooses to run for president, she'll have to compete in an open field, which is a little bit harder than just being picked. So if she actually can win the primary election in an open primary, then I think people will know a lot more about her and be in a better place to judge her.
What about those polls that were taken? I don't know if you put faith in those or not, that asked whether or not she was qualified to be president, and you had what substantially over half the population saying she's not up to the task yet. Are those accurate, you think, or not meaningful?
No, I think that's meaningful, and that's why I said, I mean, yeah, probably, like you'd say, it was probably hurt McCain a little bit. But, you know, if people... Remember, McCain did get 46% of the vote, and the 46% of the people who voted for him, a lot of them thought that Sarah Palin wasn't the most qualified, but they felt that on balance they still supported his ticket. So I think it's a small factor, vice presidential choice. There's a lot of press. It always happens when the polls are swinging a lot. So you're picking it. I mean, it's like, you know, the quarterback throws the ball, all of a sudden there's a VP pick, and then the ball's caught or not, and there's a tendency to feel that influenced the outcome. And I think if any vice presidential candidate since Dan Quayle is hurt, then it's probably been Palin, but it's just hard to, you know, it's hard to get the hard numbers on it because people will try to rationalize their choice one way or another.
Muhammad is next from Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
It's very surreal today for me, living to see this moment. I'm 58 years old, and I think I would have had this feeling even if I had just exercised my right to vote and voted for Senator Obama or President-elect Obama. But the fact that I had an opportunity, myself and two of my sons and one of my daughters, to work with to get out the vote the last 4 days... I was amazed at the organization. You hear about it, you read about it, but I have never been involved, and I've been involved in campaigns. I campaigned for Governor Thompson. I've campaigned for State Senator Moore, former State Senator Moore. I have never seen, and I'm proud to have been part of an organization that was as efficient and as, I'll say, technically ran as what I saw here in Madison. It was amazing. And I kind of know what Republicans or people who campaigned for the Republican Party in 2004 felt like when you have unlimited resources and you can do things in a relaxed manner and work with people who are so well prepared and so organized, it was very impressive.
Thank you, Muhammad. Thanks so much for the call.
One thing I'm actually really interested in seeing is how this organization transfers to a political organization once Obama's president. I think that every 4 years, you'll have the victorious candidate say, I remember Clinton said this, that this is the permanent campaign. We're not going to shut down. We're going to involve all the voters. Then usually, once governing starts, it's actually hard to keep that organization going. It's hard to keep that enthusiasm. So if Obama can really, and his group can really do that, you know, that would be amazing.
What about the money that he had? How much of an advantage is that? He had a lot of money.
Hard to put a number on it, but I think it is an advantage. Obama had some disadvantages going in. I mean, he had the big advantage of being a Democrat, perhaps a disadvantage of being an ethnic minority. Having the money help. Maybe it gave him a couple percentage points that he wouldn't have otherwise got.
Mm-hmm.
I think he still would have won with an equal amount of money, but he would have won by less.
Thanks, Muhammad, so much for the call. And let's go to Wayne from Holman next. Hello, Wayne.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'll tell you what, I feel very good today as a Norwegian Christian conservative, and those are probably three strikes against me already, but I think Barack Obama is going to be a fine president. I didn't vote for him, but my heart is with him, and I'd salute him any day of the week. And all I would ask, you know, I was a secular humanist, Kathleen, in college. What age and intellect changes, it does what strange things to you. But what I would ask only is that some of the folks that supported Barack Obama, and I will now, is that they sheathe their sword against Sarah Palin. She's not Mephistopheles incarnate. She's a good family woman, and I didn't agree with some things that she said, but I think as a country we need to hopefully, there'll always be partisanship, but come together to find common ground and to get good things done for these great United States of America, whom I love deeply. And Kathleen, to you, did they sign CC?
Sorry?
Did they sign Sabathia? I always have to ask you a baseball question. You stay here. I know your husband is deep into it.
Not that I'm aware of. It was all political discussion yesterday, but let me tell you, baseball supersedes even politics. So I must think the answer is no.
All right.
Thanks.
God bless both of you.
Thanks, Wayne. Thanks very much for the call. Very gracious call from Wayne. Will most of the people who voted for McCain, do you think, be as willing to accept President Obama?
I don't know. Remember the poll a few years ago where people were asked whether George Bush was a uniter or a divider, and 50% thought he was a uniter and 50% thought he was a divider. On the other hand, there was much more of a consensus about Bill Clinton, that he was liked by 70% of the voters, even to the end of his campaign. So whether even voters who disagreed with a lot of Clinton's policies, who were not liberal, felt that Clinton was a good president, you know, mostly thought his job performance was good. And, you know, voters are basically pragmatic. We know that, you know, even if we are strongly liberal or conservative, whoever's president is not going to be just like us anyway. So all we can really hope for is that they govern in a sensible way, given their constraints.
We go to Aaron next from Harvard, Illinois. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I took a very long journey, starting with being disillusioned with Bush. I've never voted Democrat in a national election. That caused me to read Bill Clinton's book to see, you know, am I missing something here? Which led to reading Obama's book, which led me to hand these out to my family members. And I guess the question I have is, statistically, when you look at how many people did a lift and shift, they looked at the Republican Party, they're doing things that just don't represent what we believed, which caused us to have the ability to hear Obama. How many people aren't even listening because they're set? in what they believe, and so they couldn't hear him. And because of Bush, I mean, McCain's a good man. If I would have looked back 4 years ago, I would have voted for McCain. But I guess the point is, how many people did this happen to, and could they statistically look at this and say, you know what, this lift and shift is going on? And I'll take my question off.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for the call.
Well, when most people are asked what determined their vote, what's important for them in the forthcoming election, overwhelmingly people talk about the economy. So again, thinking about pragmatism, a lot of it has to do with whether you like or dislike George Bush or somebody else. Sometimes people feel there's time for a change, and sometimes, you know, people think we should go with what we have. And again, remember that with McCain getting 46% of the vote, most of the people weren't switching. But in bad economic conditions, I think it's much easier to say, well, now is the time to try something new.
And let's go to an email. Mike from Algoma, do you think, Andrew, that Kerry could have won in 2004 if he had had a campaign committee as good as Obama's?
Maybe. It was very close. Kerry almost won in 2004, even losing the popular vote. On the other hand, if Kerry's strategy was different in 2004, maybe George W. Bush's would have been too. I don't think Kerry would have won by as much as Obama won in 2008.
Pat from Green Bay, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. What a day to rejoice. Huh?
Hi, Pat.
Yeah, and you have to be happy. There's a puppy coming to the White House.
I listened to that. I said, my dog was sitting on my lap, and I said, Murph, that's great news.
and the where's and the why's that and people vote. And I think a lot of it in 2004 was the Christian coalition that helped Bush win. And I think, again, it was the Christian coalition that was the downfall for John McCain with his picking of Sarah Palin. I think he was trying to pick up that coalition vote, and it kind of bit him badly. And I wanted to know what you thought of that.
I would like to see the poll data on that. Ever since 1992, there's been a big frequent church attenders have been much more Republican than secular, non-church attenders in this country. It was a big gap in 92, 96, and 2000. In 2004, the gap between religious and seculars was actually lower. And so I am very curious to see what happened in 2008. Before seeing the numbers, I can't really comment.
Thank you, Pat, very much for your call. Let's go on to Mervin from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Mervin.
Yes. Like I was saying, when I woke up this morning, I looked in the mirror, I was still white, and I was thinking, well, what would I be thinking all day today if I was black? I mean, you look up and there's a guy that looks like me as president. The first lady, for the first time you could ever imagine, looks like my sister, my mother, my daughter. Anywhere in the world, if they elected somebody black, nothing be said. It isn't America. America has always got to be white. And it must be really joyous, and I can't blame them. But they really didn't celebrate the way I thought they would, but I can't blame them if they do, because it's such an amazing thing that we finally broke through that.
Andrew.
Oh, yeah, what can I say? I think it is amazing. It's like a lot of things, you know, once it happens, it fits. I mean, you know, the challenge, I mean, what Obama did was, number one, as I already said, like in a humorous but serious way, that he was running as a Democrat in a good Democratic year. Number two was that he won in the primary. And I think his primary election victory, there you really have to talk about, I mean, that was certainly unexpected. And so, yeah, it is definitely a historic event. I think in some ways comparable to John Kennedy. There's a lot of similarities. Kennedy won a close election after 8 years of Republican rule, and he was also an ethnic minority and the first Catholic to become elected president.
That election was so close, though, when you look at, what was it, 180,000 votes.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely closer. But, you know, I think there was a similar sense in which also, you know, in a way of Kennedy being, well, a Catholic president, and Catholics at that time thought of as somewhat of an ethnic minority,
sure,
thought of as not completely American, and also generally thought of as more of a working class group. Yet Kennedy himself did not have any kind of working class aura. In a sense, he didn't need to, because he had this ethnic connection. He was automatically Irish Catholic,
mm-hmm,
while being privileged. Now, Obama was not, did not have a privileged upbringing, but Obama has done a lot, and certainly has, you know, pulled himself up to that economic status. And so I do, as I said, I do see some similarities, so perhaps,
sure,
you can talk to people who remember 1960 well and see what they think.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mervyn, very much for the call. Earl is next from Medford. Hi, Earl.
A hearty good morning, Arth. What a wonderful morning. Even our two Greenland Huskies have their tails way up.
Are they going to the White House?
If there's room. My question, two quick parts. How soon can Obama get us out of Iraq, and what obstacles will he run in, like this agreement that Bush is working out, and also close Guantanamo?
That's outside my area of expertise.
Okay.
How soon do you expect it, Earl? Let's switch this to you.
Matter of, we got in there in a couple months. I think we can get out of Iraq. And Guantanamo could be closed within a month, I would think, and similar places like that. They've both been a real cloud on the whole United States, and somebody's got to come forward and really turn us around. On, if you talk about change, I know the economy's important, but this Iraq war has been a big millstone on our neck for many, many years now.
Thanks very much for the call, Earl. It's interesting to look at how the issues have changed, and certainly when the economy went so sour, this is the issue. People are worried about their jobs, right? They're worried about layoffs. They're worried about being able to pay bills, their houses, et cetera. It seems to me as though the new president is going to have to act on that pretty immediately. There's so much to deal with for the incoming president, don't you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it's you know, it's always true. There's always a lot to deal with, and you know, in a sense, no coincidence. If things were going really well, probably the voters would have put in another Republican.
Right.
The historical pattern is voters don't like to throw the bums out. And in fact, if you look at previous elections where we have, you know, John F. Kennedy coming in or Eisenhower in 1952, cases where someone's come from the other party and won presidency, there haven't been huge landslides. Eisenhower did win strongly in 1952, but it wasn't a landslide like Lyndon Johnson in 1964 or Reagan in 1984. So the very fact that Obama won is already evidence that things are going to be tough. And, you know, all I can say is, again, with Reagan, a lot has to do with expectations. And to the extent people are comparing Obama's administration to what's been happening in the last 4 years, that puts him in a better shape.
Thanks so much, Earl, for the call. We're welcoming phone calls for Andrew Gelman this hour. He's the author of Red State, Blue State, Rich State, Poor State, Why Americans Vote the Way They Do, a professor of statistics and political science at Columbia University, and also author of Teaching Statistics, A Bag of Tricks. We have an email you can use as well. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Andrew Gelman, our guest, back to phone calls in just one moment. How long will it take, and where will you look for the information that will give you detailed county by county who went for Kerry, who went for Bush in 2004, and where we are now? Is that a long time in being put together, or in this age of fairly quick events, will you be able to look this week at a place that will show you that kind of information, Andrew?
I don't know. I hope it's pretty soon. I think the data aren't hard to get. It's actually sort of funny because it's just amateurs pretty much typing it in. I mean, at the state level, it's official data. There's no national repository. There are some dedicated amateurs who will type in a bunch of numbers. Like last night, I made a bunch of graphs, so I typed in 100 numbers, which were the votes in the 50 states, according to CNN. Somewhere there's somebody who just likes to type, I think, and is typing in 3,000 numbers. And a bunch of us are going to make scatter plots, and when we see outliers, we're going to call this guy up, and he'll probably tell us that he had a typo and so forth.
Uh-huh.
I also have to say, I heard your advertisement in the break, and in when I'm on the radio in New York, they never advertise horse feed. That's just, it's a different world there.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Bruce from Milwaukee. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there.
Hi.
You know, my concern is that the media is going to cast this as a race about race. You know, and when you heard McCain's concession speech and the pundit, David Brooks, they said this was a race won on race. And I disagree. When I looked at the Wisconsin last night, the rural counties of Wisconsin all voted blue. And in the Supreme Court race here, which was a black-white race, they all voted red. And I went out and did canvassing, and what I felt was that Obama had crossed the white-black line with his concern for the middle class, which has been economically squeezed to death, with his interest in job creation in America and health care and energy independence. And those are things that are not specifically appealing to black voters. And I'm very concerned that the media is going to, and the Republican Party, are going to use the subtext as race and say he won this based on race. What do you think about that?
To the extent race is an explanation, I would say it makes Obama look better, not worse, because the consensus is that being an ethnic minority hurt him at the polls. He won despite his race. So I wouldn't, if that's brought up, then I don't see, you know, I don't see that as a political negative for him at all. Looking at the numbers, he did better among all racial groups. He gained, compared to Kerry got 41% of the white vote, and Obama got 44%. Then among, as of the polls that I, the exit polls from last night, among Asians, he did 8 points better. He went from Kerry got 56% among Asians, and Obama got 64%. Among Latinos, Obama did 13 points better. Kerry got 55% among Latinos, and Obama got 68%. Among African Americans, Obama won 96%. So he did better among ethnic minorities, and he improved compared to Kerry more among ethnic minorities. So although race does not explain how everybody voted, there is certainly correlation there.
Well, that's disturbing to a white person. I like to think that he crossed that line.
Well, you know, it's also true that ethnic minorities are more economically liberal. Economics is the most important issue. So that's where he did better than Kerry. So that's the sort of racial part. But
okay,
then Kerry did much better among minorities than whites also.
I just don't want to see it. I think that it shows the racial subtext of the GOP, how they were trying to fight this on a spurious basis. I just don't want it to be dismissed as a racial coup. I really do want to believe that the issues really mattered more. And that's how I can celebrate it. Otherwise, I'm a little confused.
Thank you. Thanks for the call, Bruce.
Yep.
And let's go next to Rich from Nina. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. Just a little bit on the humor side. I just wonder, we were all waiting for a while for the October surprise. I wonder if that was the crash of Wall Street that helped out the Democrats. And the other thing I wanted to say is I did vote for McCain, but I'm very, very pleased that this country as a whole was able to get beyond what you were just talking about on the last call. And I think that's a whole new level for this country.
Thanks, Rich, for the call.
Well, with regard to your last comment, I mean, getting back to the rise in turnout in this election, both McCain and Obama were viewed favorably by voters in a way that Bush and Kerry weren't. I mean, it was, I'm not saying it was a uniformly positive campaign, but actually both the Democratic and the Republican candidate were viewed in a favorable way. So this election was a little bit different that way. Whether that transfers into people being, more willing to cross party lines and continue supporting Obama, I don't know. But it is something different.
Thanks for the call, Rich. We go next to Pat from Oconomowoc. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how are you guys?
Fine. How are you?
Very good. good. Real quick comment, then I'll get to my point. I guess one of the things that's going to keep us divided is comments kind of such as Bruce says, blaming the GOP for race. I mean, if you look at the Democratic primary, I think the Democratic primary was a lot more racial in the demographic breakdowns of who voted for Hillary versus who voted for Barack Obama. You know, I think the Republicans ran a pretty clean campaign based on the racial aspect of it. There were some serious questions that Obama had with past associations that were legitimate issues. But I'd like to put that all behind us. I think Obama had a great win last night. The one thing I was kind of struck by in watching McCain's concession speech was just, you know, immediately after that, how the media reacted to it. And all of a sudden, they were saying such good things about him. I was even watching Chris Matthews, you know, on MSNBC, which is obviously a pretty, you know, pro-liberal, pro-Obama network. And he was saying, you know, now here's a guy who's reached across the aisle. He just tried to do that here. And Obama has yet to prove he can do that. And, you know, I was struck by the difference all of a sudden in the way the media was portraying John McCain, that all of a sudden now he was a great guy, a good leader. Whereas a day before, I doubt Chris Matthews would have ever said that. And I would just kind of like to get the comments from your guest on, you know, how the media possibly would have perceived or reacted to a McCain victory versus the reaction that we're seeing today.
Okay, Pat, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, I think that there's a big difference between liking somebody and liking him more than the other guy. So if the question is McCain by himself, there, as I was saying, there's a lot of approval for him. If the question is McCain versus Obama, then you're going to get less approval. So it depends how it's framed. And there's no doubt that after the election is over, McCain is no longer running against Obama. McCain is just standing by himself. So I think it's natural to have a different view of him.
Let's go to Libby from Milwaukee. Hi, Libby.
Hi, I have a question regarding non-registered voters and how the statistics have changed from 2000, 2004, and 2008. For example, this Saturday I was discussing with my stepson, asking him if he was going to vote yesterday. He said no. He's also not registered to vote, which I regret that I did not discuss this with him earlier. He's a high school dropout, blue-collar worker, but he's also a taxpayer with children. And his comment to me was, well, it doesn't really matter anyway. My vote's not going to count. The election is rigged anyway. I was just wondering how statistics may have changed from the last three elections, you know, to what happened yesterday.
It's unlikely that any one vote counts as indeed. So in that case, like, he can reassure himself that indeed his vote wouldn't have made a difference last night. On the other hand, when thousands or millions of groups of voters don't turn out, that can change the outcome. And in particular, political scientists have studied this and found that non-voters or people who habitually don't vote tend to have different attitudes than voters and in many different ways. So certainly one of the reasons why the campaign doesn't seem so relevant to somebody like that might be because a lot of people like him don't vote, and the politicians might be responding to that in their pitches.
What was the statistic on youth vote last night? Do we have a final on that, Andrew?
From the exit polls, Obama did amazingly well among the under 30 group. He got something like 68% of the vote, two-thirds of the vote of people under 30. In contrast, Kerry got about 55% of the vote of people under 30, and Al Gore did no better among young people than old people. So 2008 really was different that way. The age effect is there in a way that we've never seen before. On the other hand, only 18% of the voters were under 30. And in 2004, it was 17%.
Really?
So the under-30 turnout has not increased very much. And 22% of voting-age Americans are under 30, by the way. So young people are slightly less likely to vote, and they didn't turn out in much greater numbers. Now, the only thing I can say is this is from the exit polls. I don't know if the exit polls included early voters, how much that was a factor.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be a little while before we know that, all that, the effect of the early voting, right?
Yeah, but the age difference is huge. I mean, that is
yes.
The most striking change in voting patterns.
And to what do you attribute that?
Well, how people vote depends more, not so much on their age, but on when they came of age. And I have a colleague, an economist, who's my age, in his 40s. He described himself as a Jimmy Carter Republican. And I said, what do you mean? Like, you like deregulation? And he said, no, he said, Jimmy Carter made me a Republican.
Hmm.
And right now there are a lot of George W. Bush Democrats.
Hmm.
And I think that's got to be a lot of it. And, you know, how things will go in the next 8 years, we'll have to see. It's sort of somehow not too late for people to change their preferences. But it's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Barbara from Sheboygan. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi.
We are so excited today. I'm calling because from my personal perspective, I believe this is a victory of hope over fear. And Albert Einstein said there are things that we can count that don't really count and things that we can't count that do really count. And I'm wondering if your guest would talk a little bit about, is there any way we can quantify something like the role of hope and fear in this election?
That's a good question.
Sure, you can quantify it. I haven't seen poll data on it. I mean, probably people have been asked things like that. And as I said, my impression is that people tended to like both Obama and McCain in a way that they didn't like the candidates before. I'm sure there's a lot of fear about, you know, all the things that are going on in the world.
I think that played a substantial role in this election. And there's something that's beyond the nitty-gritty of voting. There were larger themes of, I don't want to get too lofty about this, but there were larger themes at play here than I've seen in elections in quite a long time. And I think that may be due to Obama because of who he is. He's a very unusual candidate, don't you think, Andrew?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there is. You know, there's definitely that, you know, the higher turnout is telling us something right there.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of tend to retreat to these hard numbers. I have my own subjective impressions, but they're no more valuable than yours. In fact, probably much less valuable than yours. Mm-hmm. So when you ask these questions, I always back off and say, well, here's the one number that tells me something.
Right. Thanks, Barbara, for the call. Roger from Shorewood, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm good. I'm actually great after what happened, but I'm very excited for a lot of reasons, and I have two comments, and I'm interested. One, as much as I feel Barack is a superior candidate in many ways, I'm an independent. I haven't voted for a Democrat since 1988, and before that it was always Republican. When Bush ran, I went for Perot, Nader, and it just so happens when Kerry ran, I thought, again, it was one of the better of two evils because I didn't like Bush. I actually wrote in Colin Powell. My so-called surrogate mother is a colored gal, and she really raised me since I was a young boy. And my comment is, one, as much as it's a great thing to see color not be as much of an element, I really think McCain had really stabbed himself in the back several different ways in the sense that he ended up all over the map. He grandstanded. His party wasn't happy. He changed his position often enough. And he patronized, I think, the women in America when he picked Palin as more of a one-upsmanship. And so I don't think it was any one thing, like a gal mentioned the Christian Coalition. Somebody mentions race. And so that's one thing I wanted to hear his response on.
All right.
I think you might be right, in particular with Palin. On the other hand, it wasn't a good year for the Republicans. And when you lose, you know, a lot of the things you do look bad. I mean, one thing, if McCain had done a brilliant campaign and managed to get 49% of the vote and still lose, people would have talked about it, but he still would have lost, right? And maybe they would have said, what could he have done to have gotten 51%? It's, you know, just the way it is. Sometimes it's an uphill battle. both based on economic conditions and based on resources. It's hard for me to judge. It's hard for me to judge beyond that. I think by moving to the center on policy issues, McCain could have done a little bit better. I mean, the evidence is that Republicans are a bit to the right of the average voter, especially in economic policy. Moving in that direction could probably help them a little bit, but probably wouldn't have been enough in any case.
And that's it for our time today. Thank you so much. Hope you feel better, Andrew.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. Our guest this hour, Andrew Gelman. His book is Red State, Blue State, Rich State, Poor State, Why Americans Vote the Way They Do. He's a professor of statistics and political science at Columbia University. And his books include Teaching Statistics, A Bag of Tricks. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production, and thanks for all of the work that she's done in putting together wonderful shows for 2 years now almost as we have been covering this presidential campaign. Now a whole new set of issues. Well, part of the issues we've discussed, but a new administration to deal with them, so we'll be on the case. Believe us. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.